from my heart and from my hand. Why don't people understand my intention?
Welcome to this episode of Wall Street to Main Street. I'm your host, Emily Vani, here with my co-host, finance expert and author, and my husband, Ruben Ivani. Hey, Ruben.
Hi, Emily.
This episode is brought to you by the Investment Banking Institute, a global leader in financial training for nearly 20 years, with more than 40,000 professionals trained. To learn more, visit ibanking.com. As we mentioned in our last episode, please give us if you hear extra commotion in the background. Like many of you, we are working from home with three kids off of school. On this episode, we're going to be exploring the nexus of where science and the economy meet in context of the COVID-19 pandemic. We have the distinct pleasure today to be joined by our guest, Dr. Oriol Sunyer, who is a professor of immunology and pathobiology at University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine. Oriol, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you guys? How are you guys doing?
Good. I hope you and your loved ones are staying well in all this craziness.
So far, so good. Let's keep our fingers crossed.
Before we get started, I want to continue to recognize everyone who is on the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic, who are doing everything they can to keep us safe and healthy. Thank you for your service. Also, a quick disclaimer that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast belong solely to our hosts and guests and not necessarily to our employers, organizations, committees, or other groups or individuals. The content is for informational purposes only. You should not construe any of the information or other material as legal, tax, investment, financial, medical, or other advice. So, Oriol, before we get into some more of the hard-hitting stuff, I'm curious, what inspired you to get into your field? How did you get to where you are today?
Before I answer that, first, I would like to thank you for inviting me into this podcast. And more importantly, and as you just mentioned, I would also like to thank especially all of these heroes that are on the front lines nowadays, especially all of the doctors, the nurses, all of the people that make it possible for the hospitals to run, and even all of these people that have offered themselves to be guinea pigs to test all of these new vaccines. So tremendous thank to all of these heroes. Now, answering your question, I've always been fascinated by how organisms manage to survive, right, in our environment. And in that regard, I've always been fascinated to understand how is that we fight diseases. But not only how as humans we fight diseases, but to understand that from an evolutionary perspective. So that is, how have we evolved as a species in order to recognize new pathogens? And the way I have come to study that very important point is by studying the immune system of different animal species, anywhere from fish all the way to humans, and understanding the different strategies that all of these animals have evolved to fight diseases. And that gives you a very broad perspective on how different systems, how different species fight diseases, and possibly we can learn from that.
Well, and as an evolutionary immunologist, can you sort of give us your high level take on some of the things that are going on here with this COVID-19 pandemic? Is this pandemic different than other pandemics? What are you seeing going on with this one specifically?
Woof, this is the question of the million, right? You know, scientists need years to understand a single pathogen. We are only 2 to 3 months into this very new pathogen. So at this point, we can say very little other that is a new pathogen and that is very contagious, really contagious. It's really not that deadly. And that is the secret here that perhaps a lot of people do not appreciate. You know, there is a very close correlation between how deadly the virus is and how contagious it is. It's interesting because if a virus is really deadly, right, what happens is that it kills the host very fast so that it cannot transmit to other hosts as fast. So therefore, it's not so contagious. What happens with this virus is that it's extremely contagious, but it's not so deadly. Yes, it's perhaps deadlier than the flu, and that still remains to be demonstrated. There is data out there that points into this direction, but that it's really a very, very contagious virus. And it's also an invisible virus. Invisible, why? It's because there's a lot of asymptomatic people that are infected by this virus, right? And they just shed the virus to healthy people. And it's very hard to fight against a virus like that. So all of these aspects are, you know, maybe not new, but certainly perhaps more virulent than in other previous versions of coronaviruses. Coronaviruses are not new. They have been here before, and they have, you know, induced other illnesses, but not as, you know, severe as the one that we are now witnessing.
Well, and given those things, would you mind giving us an update on how the scientific community is viewing our quarantine efforts, the social distancing efforts? You know, what seems to be working? What could be improved?
Definitely there is a overwhelming agreement that social distancing is really working. There is no doubt about that, and everyone agrees. And that has already been proven in many countries, right? So that's the one thing that everyone agrees. The other thing that finally everyone is coming to an agreement is that masks are key. And that was something, as you know, that's a topic that created a lot of confusion for the last few weeks. Initially, we were told that we didn't really need to wear masks. And now the scientific community has come to the realization that masks are really one of the most critical aspects of stopping these pandemics. And the reason is very simple. And that is because when you wear a mask, it's not so important in terms to protect yourself, unless you wear a top-of-the-line mask, right? Like an N95 mask, that those stop viruses. But like, for example, surgical-grade masks may not be so efficient in protecting you from the virus, but what these masks do is they stop all of those micro drops that you produce when you sneeze, when you cough. And all of these micro drops that are coming out from your mouth in the form of saliva micro drops, those are the ones that harbor the virus, and those are the ones that infect other people. So wearing those masks really, really stop all of these micro drops from being in a close proximity to other people, and therefore stopping new infections. And unfortunately, this is something that, in my view, should have been implemented from very early on.
And I'm going to toss it to Ruben from there, Oriol, because, you know, these efforts to contain the virus, to stop the spread, working, maybe they could be even better. But the reality is they're having a direct effect on the business community. And although these things are helpful, what is it looking like, Ruben, in the business world that we're doing these things?
Well, I think for starters, this has represented a major paradigm shift in people's beliefs about how business should be conducted. And it's certainly forcing people to adapt and adapt very quickly. Now, that being said, there's also a massive movement towards mobilization around aligning business resources towards solving this problem. And in particular, in the pharmaceutical industry, what we're seeing is unprecedented. We're seeing testing at speeds that have never been done before, both for vaccines as well as for antiviral drugs. In fact, it's looking very promising that a major pharmaceutical company, Gilead, may have an antiviral drug that's proving effective. Indeed, more tests will occur in the coming months, but this is the kind of thing that the world has never seen before, at this speed, at least. So I think for the first time in modern history, we're seeing various sectors of the business community coming together, coalescing around this singular cause, which is solving this health crisis. And at the same time, the byproduct, the very positive byproduct of all this will be a better and stronger business community.
And Oriol, do you see that sort of same thing where, as a member of the scientific community, all eyes are really on this pandemic, that perhaps other work you're doing has been put on hold, to you and your colleagues are really focusing on understanding this virus, this pandemic?
Let me first go through one point that I actually forgot to mention before, and I really think it's important, that we could do perhaps better in terms of protecting ourselves from the virus. You know, everyone is stressing the social distancing as well as the masks now. But I think it's important that we cover our eyes, especially when we are in very close proximity from other people. Let's not forget that this virus can enter the body also through the eyes, right? So if you go into a very crowded area, I would highly recommend that you wear some good glasses or goggles that are well sealed, because it's already been proven that the virus goes or can infect you through the eyes. Now, this is just something that people don't talk too much about, but I think, but at least myself, when I go to a supermarket, or if my kid goes out and is in close proximity with other people, he wears a goggle, like a ski goggle, and I do the same. I may look funny, but you know what? My health is worth me looking funny. Now,
I think we're all in that boat right now. Yeah. We'll take whatever precautions necessary.
Exactly. But I think that no one is talking too much about that, and I would encourage that. It's not going to hurt you, right? It can only help you. So anyway, now if you can repeat now the question again, please.
Similar to the business world, and that was a great piece of advice, but similar to the business world, where a lot of eyes are focused on this pandemic and the virus and understanding the virus, and resources are being put there, do you find that similar attempts in the scientific community, that really all eyes in your community are on this, understanding it, finding solutions, and finding ways to protect people?
Absolutely. Here, there are many aspects. You know, when we talk about scientific community, we're talking about a very broad community, right? Even within the medical sciences or the immunology sciences, when we talk about that community, the part of the community that is dealing with viruses, and more specifically with coronaviruses, is large, but it's not as large, of course, as the rest of the community. So for those scientists that have been dealing with coronaviruses or similar types of viruses, as well as for the scientists that have been dealing with vaccine development, whether it's for viruses or other pathogens, certainly this is an incredible moment. And the NIH have ramped up initiative, you know, the National Institute of Health, which provides a lot of grants for research for universities and other public institutions. Let's not forget that the NIH is the institution in the world that provides the most amount of funding for research, and that is quite incredible. So the NIH has ramped up a lot of grant money precisely to tackle many of these issues, you know, to speed up vaccine development, to speed up drug testing, to speed up development of kits to test for the presence of the virus or to test for antibodies for people that have already been infected. So yes, this can be felt in my community every step of the way.
Part of this eagerness to learn more about this virus and come up with a vaccine obviously has to do with human health and making sure that we can save lives. But the reality is another part of it has to do with business and getting our lives back to normal quickly so the economy can continue to run. Ruben, I'll start with you, and then Oriol, I'll toss it to you. We're eager to get back to work and get back to normal life. When do you think is the right time to, quote unquote, open the economy, reopen states? Ruben?
Well, you know, this is a question that government leaders, business professionals, essential workers, and academics, and scientists, and the list goes on and on. We're all asking this very same question. And I think we're starting to converge on a level of consensus. If you had asked this question 2 weeks ago, I think we would have had very distinct opinions on this matter. But I think we are all seeking to strike the right balance between containment of this pandemic, recognizing that it's probably not going away anytime soon, barring any miracle, but at the same time, trying to resume daily activities, albeit in some sort of staged manner. So I think, and certainly the news continues to flow in real time around this matter, is that there will be a staged approach to opening the economy. I think, as the president suggested recently, will probably occur on a state-by-state basis based on certain criteria being met. All things considered, I think that the plan to open the economy in stages is probably a smart thing because it allows us as a society and as an economy to hedge ourselves in an effort to manage risk. In other words, if outbreaks continue to surface, then we can be nimble enough to close the economy again, or at least close sectors of it. So I think we're moving in the right direction around this, but I'm eager to hear Dr. Sunier's perspective on this from the scientific standpoint.
I think we are moving in the right direction, although I would define many of these attempts to go back to where we were as wishful thinking, unfortunately. Because there are too many unknowns at this point. I mean, all of this will depend clearly on some very basic factors, right? Do we have the capability and the capacity to test a very large chunk of the US population so that we make the virus visible? Okay? The answer is no. At this point, we do not have this capacity. So it would be suicidal to start opening up certain areas of the economy without knowing where the virus is, right? When you drive a car on a highway, you don't drive with your eyes blindsided, right? You want to know where you're going. So that's the same comparison. The other big thing here is, in order for us to be able to open up large areas of the economy, is to be able to have a good working vaccine so that the population becomes immune and then we do not have further outbreaks. And that's another huge unknown. You know, you see news out there that they say that we may have a vaccine in 9 months or a year from now. I mean, typically, it takes anywhere from 5 to 10 years to develop a good vaccine. It's just that we are now skipping many, many regulatory steps that in the past were not skipped, like animal trials. You know, we are going directly into human trials now, with the risk that that bears for the people that are being tested. But this is an emergency, and I understand that we need to skip some of these regulatory steps. But the question is, will we have a vaccine? And sometimes people read the news and may look straightforward to have a vaccine, but the problem with a vaccine is manifold. Unfortunately, there have been some strains of coronavirus and MERS, which is from the same family of the coronavirus, in which antibodies, rather than stopping the virus, they actually foster the infection. They actually make the infection stronger. I don't know if you have heard of the dengue virus. Once you get dengue once, if you get it a second time, the infection is much stronger and it can even kill you. So what I mean by that is that there has been some cases in which when people has been given antibodies against the virus, the infection gets stronger. It is not clear yet that a vaccine will work. As I say, in the past, for some coronaviruses, it's been shown the opposite, that actually antibodies, which are the molecules that are produced by a vaccine, do the opposite. So if that will happen, and we don't know whether that will happen, we don't know whether that will happen only to a very small part of the population or to a very large part of the population. But if vaccines don't work, then we will be in the dark for quite a long time. So that's why I'm saying that all of this talk about reopening the economy and so on and so forth is not really up to us. We can do the plans that we want, but it's up to the virus, and it's up to our capacity to finally be able to come up with a vaccine that will work. And it's as simple as that.
It sounds like there are moments, especially right now, where there's a push and pull between the economy and science, Ruben.
Yeah, I don't think it's a binary outcome. I certainly believe, as Dr. Seigneur so articulately presented his point around vaccines and the challenges around bringing a vaccine to market, it's very difficult to pinpoint a timetable. And clearly, there are many obstacles, many challenges. But I think that the economy, this idea of opening the economy, like I said, it's not really a binary decision. It's not we keep it shut or we open it up. It's really a question of which areas of the economy will be open and when. Because the simple fact of the matter is that we just can't continue to operate like this.
I agree with you, Ruben. All I'm saying is that in order to do that, you need two very simple things, as I said. First and foremost, we need a massive capacity to test people, not only to test for the virus, which is a DNA-based test, you know, but only we need the capacity to test whether or not a person have already been infected, and those are serological tests. Those tests, they define whether or not your body has created immunity or antibodies against the virus, right? So it would be so important to be able to define that, to be able to understand, let's say, you know, we have a very important sector of the economy that really needs to jump start. Okay, let's test all of the people that are involved in that sector. And for those that have already passed the disease because serological tests are positive, okay, let's send them there to work, because it's been shown clearly that chances of reinfection are very slim, almost impossible. But the problem, Ruben, is that we do not have this capability yet, right? So I'm not saying it has to be binary, but we do need tools in place in order to be able to reopen the economy. Otherwise, you're going to send people to work and they're going to be infected and it's going to be worse, because then these people will get sick and they will have to go back home and the economy will stop again. So I know I hope I made myself clear on where I'm coming from.
Well, I think at an from an ideological perspective, we can certainly agree that testing is key. From a pragmatic standpoint, what concerns me is when those tests will be available. And the longer we go without those tests and the longer we continue in this situation, we're creating additional problems. But I think you and I can certainly agree that testing is crucial in terms of opening up sectors of the economy and feeling confident that we're minimizing the risk
of
further contagion.
Yes, we are the number one biomedical potency in the world. You understand that? We are the number one, you know, biomedical nation in the world. We should be able to ramp up tests. I mean, look what has happened in Korea, in South Korea. They ramped up tests from very, very early on. And you know what? In a nation of 50 million people, they have only 210 deaths. Only because, or mainly because, they were able to ramp up testing from very early on. Why is that we can't do that when we have all of the tools to do it? So I'm not sure.
I think you've given us a topic for a future podcast. Why is really a great topic that I think, if not us, someone needs to explore. But I think the reality is we haven't. And the hope is that we will be able to test. But that remains to be seen.
And Oriol, what do you see as potential outcomes for this pandemic? We need more testing, like you said. You believe in these efforts of social distancing, protective gear, goggles, masks. What do you see as some potential outcomes for this pandemic? How do you see it transforming our behavior and even the scientific community?
Yeah, that's such a fascinating question, right? And then maybe this question should be more geared maybe for sociologists or psychologists. But the way I see that, again, it will depend on how can we deal in the short or midterm with these pandemics, right? If we are able to find a vaccine that works for everyone, my sense is that that's going to turn into a sort of a flu-like illness, right? It may or may not come seasonally. We don't even know that. But if it was to come seasonally, we will have a vaccine. And very few people will get infected. And I believe that with time, we will go back to our old habits, all social habits, if we are able to control the disease with a vaccine. And that is because, you know, we are the product of millions of years of social evolution. And we are highly social animals or highly social beings, right? And I doubt that one single pandemic event will erase what millions of years have made us. And that is, we are very social, highly social beings. So I believe that, I mean, of course, not going to happen fast, but maybe in 1, 2, 3 years, if we have a good vaccine, we will start hugging again and kissing again. And all of this social distancing will disappear. That's me. That's what I believe. Now, that can go the other way, right? What if you don't find a vaccine? What if the vaccine that find doesn't work so well and you still have high chances to develop the vaccine, you know, the disease down the road for the next few years, well, then that will certainly change a lot of our social customs. The social distancing will continue, and we will develop, I guess, new ways to interact at the social level. So again, all of that will depend on how able we are to deal with this virus.
And Ruben, I want to toss a similar question to you. What do you see as some potential outcomes given the scientific evidence, where the scientific community is? What potential outcomes are you seeing for the economy? The stock market seems to reflect that it's optimistic that there could be a recovery. What do you see happening next?
Well, let's take the last part of your question and address it first, because in my ecosystem, all eyes are on the stock market right now. And even as Dr. Sunyer mentioned, that this broader question around outlook has enough to do about science as it does, as much to do about science as it does about sociology. The stock market historically has been forward-looking. And what it's indicating right now, the participants in the stock market, is that there's a sense of optimism. I don't know, I can't say definitively whether that optimism is grounded in reality or not. If you process what we've discussed here on today's podcast, it's fair to say that there are many, many unknowns around addressing and hopefully moving in the right direction around this pandemic. The stock market, I believe, is looking for signs of hope wherever it can find them. For example, the announcement of positive results in a very small sample set that was tested with an antiviral drug sent Dow futures up 800 points last night.
And
to me,
if I can just intersect here just for 1 second, all of these things need to be taken with a grain of salt, because in that study, and I don't know if you've seen that, the study is far from being complete. And by the way, the company did not present the control group. So how do you know that the drug worked when you are lacking the most important part of the study, which is the control group? So sometimes we jump too early in something that has been put in front of us as a positive, and sometimes this information is either manipulated or not understood in the right way, and this is a clear example. I mean, there are no controls for that study, and so that, you know, the market reacted to that. But when the controls are out there and the study is complete, maybe all of these will just disappear.
So that was actually the point I was making, Dr. Sunyer, was that the market is extraordinarily sanguine right now. Any sign of news is driving futures and then during the trading day, the actual indices higher. I think there's a general lack of understanding around the scientific variables within the financial community. I think people are clinging to signs of hope. And I think this test, or even just the preliminary results, was enough to give investors something to hang on to. But I think in the coming months, as corporate results stream in, we're already in the midst of reporting season for the first quarter of 2020. And as we proceed through the remainder of the year, I think the results will speak for themselves. This is an unprecedented economic downturn. And I think more and more market participants will have a dose of reality on which they will form their investment thesis around. So bottom line, I think that these movements have to be taken with a grain of salt in the financial markets, because the science, or at least the news around the science, is just inconclusive.
And what I'm hearing a lot is that there are areas where business and finance and science are agreeing, and they're converging and working together in areas like putting resources towards finding a vaccine to understand this virus. And there's other areas where they don't necessarily disagree, or they don't necessarily agree, and they do disagree. So, Oriol, I've read that some scientists believe that the human species will continue to come into contact with viruses from the animal world, due in part to our two worlds getting closer through human expansion on the planet, due to climate change, changes in ecosystems. As an evolutionary immunologist, can you give us your perspective on potential outcomes for this and other pandemics that may emerge in the future?
Thanks, Emily. I think that's a really, really critical question. And I hope that governments around the world are taking note on what's going on now. So on this particular pandemic, it can go many different ways, but we can either be lucky, develop a vaccine that takes care of the situation and we all go back to normal. And even if that becomes a seasonal illness, the vaccine will take care of that. Or we may be unlucky. It may take us a long time to develop a vaccine and we will have to repeat these confinement periods until we find the vaccine. Or we might be very unlucky and perhaps this virus might mutate in a way that will be more contagious or more deadly. And it will make things worse. I hope that will not happen. The good news about this virus, however, is that when compared to the flu virus, it mutates at a much slower rate, right? So the chances of that happening are not so high, but we cannot just rule that out as of yet. Now, when it comes to other pandemias, I think what, as a society, as a civilization, I would say, we may be entering into a new normal in terms of pandemias. Chances are that we may be getting new pandemias every so many years, or perhaps even every year. And why am I saying that? I'm saying that because we have altered our Mother Earth, our planet, in such a way that by altering it in such drastic ways, for example, we've cut the forest, we've polluted the waters, global warming is rampant. We are providing for new habitats for unknown viruses. And that's what's going on, right? These unknown viruses may prove fatal for not only humans, but also animals. We are exposed to all of these global warming effects. What if a bacteria or a new virus that has been melted for thousands of years now, that has been underground for thousands of years now comes up and becomes the new pandemia, not only affecting humans, but also affecting crops or agricultural animals, right? For example, in China 2 years ago, they suffered the swine industry was devastated by a swine virus, which really decimated the swine population of China. And now China has to import all of the swine meat from Europe and many other countries at much higher prices. And in fact, at that time in 2016, stocks plunged in China to never seen levels. So what I mean by that is that if we keep treating our planet the day we are treating it, and for example, our leadership for the last 3-4 years have relaxed many regulations with regards to the clean and the water air acts, so now our waters are much dirtier, our air is much more polluted. If we keep doing these kind of things, these relaxations at that level may bring up small economical gains for a short time, but then we are exposing ourselves to these pandemias that, as you can see, all of the stock gains disappear in just a few weeks, right? So my point here is that we may be getting into a new normal in terms of pandemias, they may be happening maybe once every 5 years, once every 10 years, who knows? I hope not, but maybe once every year, especially if we keep destroying our planet.
Yes, and it sounds like the area of combating global climate change, you know, focusing on sustainability is really an area where both business and science can agree that it's going to be beneficial for all of us.
Absolutely, absolutely. All new green energies and new ways to deal with the environment. It's so many opportunities there from a business perspective.
I want to leave this episode on sort of an uplifting note. I think we could all use that right now. I'm going to ask both Oriol and Ruben, where do you see areas of innovation emerging from this crisis? And Oriol, I'll start with you.
Well, so many areas. I mean, certainly all the online learning and education sector that will tremendously benefit from that, obviously, you know, because we may find ourselves in a situation, in confinement situations for every season if we do not find a vaccine, right? So who knows how long will that last? So certainly we will need universities, you know, private institutions, public institutions, we will need to develop new online learning strategies, protocols, and so on and so forth. So that poses a tremendous opportunity there, right? Obviously, the software companies that will develop all of these new education and online learning programs will also thrive. That's a good area to jump in. Or what about, for example, I don't know, new lines of clothes that incorporates PPEs, right? The design of fashionable PPEs, you know, so for the clothes industry, or even buildings and new infrastructures that are incorporating, that are prepared to facilitate social distancing in the future whenever required. We are not ready for that. So there's ample opportunity for inroads into those areas. And certainly in my field, right, in the life and medical sciences, there are so many opportunities there, you know, from coming up with better PPEs to the development of new therapeutics, whether those are antiviral drugs or vaccines, as we spoke before, and so on and so forth. So those are the things that I can think of. Ruben.
Yeah, I think we are certainly seeing some innovations. In fact, I just wrote a blog about this, and I'll just summarize a few key ones, some of which overlap with the ones you've mentioned. Clearly, e-learning and online education are seeing a surge, and with that surge, we'll see even further enhancements to modality. I think you're going to see great collaboration electronically across the globe, not just at the university level, but you'll see it even in primary education. I think that obviously the medical field will see some very positive developments. Telemedicine is reaching new heights, and that will continue to expand. And the remote workplace, I think many employers are finding that employees can indeed be productive working remotely. And I think generally that's good for the economy. It certainly promotes efficiency. So these are just a few areas that I wanted to highlight. I also, on a lighter note, read a news article about Dr. Fauci, the highly respected advisor to President Trump. He's the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, was asked about dating in the age of coronavirus and what should people be doing now that they've been in lockdown for well over a month. Can they actually create some sort of interaction with the opposite sex or even with the same sex? I'm curious, as a scientist, Dr. Sunyer, what do you think about Dr. Fauci's comments and what can be done? Because this is a big part of our economy. There are many people who have met their spouses through online dating. What does the future hold for that?
Oh boy. I mean, you know, I'm single, right? So you are now preaching to the choir here in a way, because yeah, I've been wondering that about myself, right? Yeah, you can meet online and have endless conversations, but that is not materializing in real days, because nowadays everyone is afraid to meet, right? Or what, are you going to have a date in which you are like 6 feet away? How do you toast, you know? So yeah, those are important questions, and again, the answer will come with the development of a good vaccine that will, you know, take our fears of being infected, right? So once the vaccine is out there, I think things will relax. But until that point comes, those of us that are dating out there, man, it's going to be difficult. I don't know what to tell you. A lot of yoga, a lot of exercise, you know, try to devote all of that energy elsewhere.
Well, I think we all appreciate, there's plenty of people out there who would appreciate that advice. And, you know, overall, it sounds like there are a lot of question marks on multiple fronts, between human behavior, the economy, science, but there's also a lot of opportunity for innovation. So, you know, today we really appreciate your expert insights, Dr. Sunyer. Again, we were joined on this episode of Wall Street to Main Street by Dr. Oriol Sunyer, who is a professor of immunology and pathobiology at University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine. Of course, as always, along with my husband, Ruben Advani, I'm your co-host, Emily Advani, and we look forward to next time. Thank you, Ruben, and thank you, Oriol.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you, Emily. Thank you, Ruben.